Welcome to the Phoenix Unlimited Podcast.
What's up, everybody? Thanks for tuning in to a new episode of the Phoenix MMA Podcast. Hope you enjoy this episode. This is something that I would definitely like for all my students to know about. I think everybody should honestly be taught this in school, the Pareto distribution. But we're going to look through a lens. We're going to apply it to combat sports. And you know, the title, Pareto distribution applied to combat sports and the Illuminati. So these, what I mean by Illuminati is like the elitist, like the hidden society things that people talk about. There definitely are smart, wealthy people that pass down information to their children. I read a lot of financial books and different psychological books and theories and stuff. And it's there's several that are, when it comes to the business world, where there's some business practices, like best practices, not crazy cutthroat things, but like the Pareto distribution or like compound interest or exponential growth, stuff like this. We're not like naturally good at really understanding like things like exponential growth and compound interest. Yeah, compound interest sneaks up, is a very strong force that's at work, and everything, or not everything, sorry, with a lot of things in our life that are important to know about. Don't have to put everything under a microscope, but help us out so we can learn faster and be more productive in life, more successful in life. The Pareto distribution is an important thing to know. If you want to be successful, if you want to be productive, if you want to do well in a profession or a hobby or anything that you're looking to do, if you want to learn fast, then the Pareto distribution is going to be something that you want to know about. And that's why I think, like, you know, you should be taught it in school. It's not a crazy thing or anything. It's pretty interesting. And yeah, the sooner you learn this, the faster you can acquire new skills. So first thing, just quick review. Congratulations, everybody. The last month that competed, we had Naga and Grappling Games. We are uploading those, actively uploading those. YouTube only allow you to upload so many videos in 24 hours, and then there's a pause. So we have Naga videos up, and now we're also uploading Grappling Games. And we had several cameras that were recording. We're putting up everything that we have, but we still haven't collected all of the matches yet, but we're still going to have, for what we have right now, it's going to take a couple days of YouTube's maximum to upload all those matches. So if you want to watch your matches, just check that. Every day should have more videos coming up over the next couple days. So congratulations, good work, everybody that competed. Did really well at Naga and at Grappling Games. We had some really good matches, and there's some really good things to go back and study your matches, even the ones that you, especially your losses. But there's a lot of stuff that we can learn from those. So just the Phoenix MMA Podcast YouTube channel. So just search on YouTube, Phoenix MMA Podcast. I'm going to upload the podcast there too, so it's on YouTube and have multiple platforms to have stuff on. So good job, everybody, that competed. Thanks for, you know, working really hard and working together as a gym, helping out all your training partners. And, the thing I really like about individual sports like martial arts, combat sports, is that you get the combination of both. You get the individual and the team aspect, because you're going to compete as an individual, but you're working with a team to acquire all the skills and get the necessary sparring that you need to get ready for competitions and stuff. So it's a cool blend of like self-responsibility, but also accountability to the group and the team and the culture environment and help out. So it's a good integration of both of those. All right. Yeah, good work, everybody. And at the end of this, we'll have some tournament announcements and MMA fights announcements as well. It's going to be a busy year, busy season, which is awesome. Lots of good, as long as it's a good busy, it's fun. 2020 was not a busy year. Everyone was shut down or locked down for a significant amount of time. So the rubber band effect is probably going to cause everybody to be really, really busy in the tournament, and fight schedule for this year looks to be that way. All right, so let's get going. So Pareto distribution applied to combat sports and the Illuminati. First thing I'm going to give a tip is this is going to be for this is if you're like you don't have to do jiu-jitsu this way. This is just a suggestion if you want to get good really fast. It's also an interesting concept to know. This podcast or the Pareto distribution really is probably going to fit right in line for these like the top people. So like combat athletes, all of our combat athletes at the gym, you're probably going to really like this podcast and you're going to want to apply it. It's going to help you out because you're competing. You're not just doing it as a like just a you know you're competing. You know, it could still be a hobby level where you're not trying to be pro or anything, but you're going past hobby you're going into the competitive circuit. So you're gonna want to work on these things, or you want to apply the Pareto distribution so that you win more often and you're more successful and not unsuccessful, because that could, you know, being unsuccessful stifle your enthusiasm and you'll train less or enjoy it less. So tips for this. So if you're a combat athlete, this is gonna be right up your alley. Not all Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu or Muay Thai kickboxing or boxing or wrestling, not all of it has to be applied this way. You can also do it just for enjoyment, but the Pareto distribution is for a competitive realm. So if you're signing up for a tournament or an MMA fight, boxing bout, kickboxing bout, this is going to be for you. It's for people who want to get as good as possible as soon as possible. So if you want to improve and get good, you want to speed it, this is the fast track. The fast track, just a spoiler alert, is not like a YouTube commercial with some dude sitting by a pool telling you that he's going to make you a millionaire overnight. There's not a fast track like that. It's going to take compound interest, and it's going to take time, hours and thousands of hours, hundreds of hours, thousands of hours to get good. But you can waste hundreds and thousands of hours by going down some rabbit holes that maybe you don't want to go down, or you can go down those later on once you get to the skill that you want. But if you want to improve and get good very fast, people with busy lives that need to maximize their time as they don't have a lot of free time. So maybe you're a busy, just a professional, your job, whatever it is. Say you're an attorney and you work a lot of hours and you can only train 2 or 3 days a week, and you know, whatever it is, you have a, say, 40 or 50 hour work week, but also you have family to balance. You also have, you just have more dimensions of your life, than just training. This is going to maximize your time. So you don't waste as much time. And so that you can get a lot of progression done in really a short amount of days, just by really focusing, what you're doing when you're training, not wasting time essentially. It's an interesting, next thing is just, it's an interesting principle in nature. Like to me, it's just interesting. I'm a big nerd. So I like, if I hear a new idea that I'd never kind of conceived or perceived, or maybe I kind of perceived it, but it wasn't, there's no way I could fully articulate it and take it from my theory to something that actually works in the real world. So it's an interesting principle just for that. If you like nerd stuff, if you're interested in different things, and also it's a lesson for the rest of your life. You know, it could be your profession. You know, whatever it is, you want to learn how to cook really fast. You want to learn how to dance really fast. You want to play an instrument as fast as possible. And in your professional life too. In your professional life. So if you want to be promoted or just be perform well when you're working, you can use the Pareto distribution. All right. So first thing I'm going to go with just like an early life observation, or how I first encountered the Pareto distribution, but I wasn't aware that I was. And it was something that, you know, like everybody, I have a bunch of theories on how I think the world works and what I think would be the best, the way to do things. And with good friends, I'll bounce those ideas and say it and stuff, but I'm not about to give one of my ideas and say that everybody has to follow it. or do it when it comes to like how you have to behave and stuff. But everybody's like that. We all think of our own theories of how we think this is the best way to do stuff. I accidentally stumbled on the Pareto distribution, and probably a lot of people have. I noticed, so I'll say like I got a half right, or 20% right, or 30%. But the problem is, I'm also like my personality. You might be like this, maybe you're not. My personality is, I'm a bit of a rebel in some things. So it's weird. Like I don't like, there's some ways I don't like to, in some instances, I don't like to be told what to do. But at the same time, I do respect authority, and I do respect systems and organization and cleanliness and all these things. So I appreciate and I do respect it, but at the same time, there's a rebellious side of me when it's being told, when I'm being told what to do. And I also like to think outside the box. So whatever system I encounter or game or profession, I always like to think outside the box and try to find alternate routes to see if there's smart ways to change things up, which is, it's not terrible. That's that's one of the good things that humans have, is we can think outside the box and figure out tough things for solutions. So the mix of the thinking outside the box and the rebel, and then also just being young, the younger you are, you're more like that. And the older I get, the more I look back and just kind of laugh at my younger self, just like, ah, man, so, you know, just laugh. Just, you just learn a lot over time, but you can't shortcut it. So the part that I got half right, the part that I got half right on the Pareto distribution was, I noticed that I started with sports really young, like, 4 or 5, peewee football. And then four wheelers, like motocross racing, four wheelers as well. And I started noticing at a young age, I can't remember exactly, I can't tell you what year, but I started noticing that with football, four wheelers, like BMX bicycles, video games, I started noticing that there were behaviors that the best players were doing. They were slightly different, and not every, the best player did the exact same play or anything, but there were similar moves that they were doing that weren't just random, and it wasn't just, reaction time, and it wasn't just strength or things like this. There were these movements, and I couldn't put my finger on it, but I started noticing, just a pattern, and I was like, oh, this is interesting. Okay. With this sport, these certain moves get hit a lot. By the really good people. And I was like, okay, oh, that's interesting. And I saw it with video games, and like I said, racing, like BMX and four-wheelers, football, then wrestling. So I started noticing it, but at the same time, the other part of me, the rebellious side, like say if everybody adopts some fashion style, some shoe to wear or something, if it's not... Like if it works with me, if my personality type is like aesthetically, if my eyes are attracted to that type of shoe, then yeah, I'll get a pair of shoes. But if just because everybody's wearing it, it will almost cause me to not wear it because everybody's buying it and wearing it. And when I was younger, I would do that, and sometimes I missed out on some fun. I'll admit I missed out on some fun things to do, some fun experiences and stuff. So yeah, so again, with this lesson, this is for, it's going to be really for my young fighters on, it's going to hammer in the reason why you want to work on fundamentals and basics. Fundamentals and basics are what are going to win fights for you, but I'm also saying I understand why you're rebellious and you want to do creative new things. And this could be the young fighters in the gym, but also when you're just young to a new martial art, it could be wrestling, boxing, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, kickboxing. This is a reason why the Pareto distribution is going to help explain why you want to follow the coach's lesson plan and why you want to follow the stuff in that order and why we design the practices the way we do. at the gym, and so hopefully this will help explain why, hey, follow the rep count, follow the lesson plan that we have in class, it's there for a reason, and but at the same time, we'll talk about the abstract or fancy stuff to work as well. So yeah, what I was accidentally kind of noticing and observing, kind of sort of, but didn't really know what I was looking at, was the Pareto distribution. Just started noticing that for high level people, they were doing a small range or small number. There was just way more options than there were what were being applied. So like wrestling, you could see like John Smith, like low single, you know, wrestling, it's the great wrestlers have not that many moves, but no one can stop them. You know, they have the moves that they really like Jordan Burroughs, blast double. Everybody that wrestles him knows that he's great at it. Everybody knows that he's going to work on it, but they still fail to stop it. And anyway, you don't have to have 80 moves that that you're amazing at. Okay, that's the part of the point of the Pareto distribution. I was kind of noticing that the high achievers, good people, were doing a small range of techniques, and they were working really well. But at the same time, I would get distracted with other things because there would be a instructional that would come out with some cool little random thing, but I didn't notice it being seen at high level competition. So when I first started training, I was getting books everywhere, and I was reading every single book, and I was just trying to do every technique that I learned that I read of a book during sparring. And I also kind of started whittling down and seeing which techniques were higher percentage, which ones were lower percentage. And that's one way to learn. It's a really fun way to learn. It's just a long process. You know, you're going out adventuring, or you can use a map. You know, if you're on an island, if you're going around and you're going to adventure the entire island, if you're that type of person, then feel free. It takes a long time to do, and it's really frustrating because you'll go down a lot of rabbit holes that just you're let down. Like you think like you're gonna work this particular guard, and you know, you don't see that guard being used at the World Championships, ADCC, anything like that, and you spend 2 years on it. You do learn some stuff out of it, but ultimately after 2 years, you're like, ah, all right, gotta cut that one down. But or you gotta stop that path. Just don't commit everything to it. Have it as a smaller piece. All right, so I'll read the actual Pareto principle since I'm ranting and actually get to it. I'll read this first. So Pareto principle. The Pareto principle states that for many outcomes, roughly 80% of consequences come from 20% of the causes. Quotations, the vital few. Other names for this principle are the 80-20 rule, the law of vital few, or the principle of factor sparsity. Let's see, the 80-20 rule, lots of times people have heard that that before, and they're like, you know, oh, 80-20 rule. Pareto distribution is the 80-20 rule, but I've heard people explain it incorrectly or try to use it as a little hack or a little cheat. So the 80-20 rule is the Pareto distribution, if you've heard of it, that 20% of your efforts are going to make up 80% of your results, which 100% spot on. I've heard people kind of switch it up a little bit where they've said the 80-20 rule. I heard someone, you know, say that they could use it this way, where you find the 20% of stuff and you just do a little bit of that and you'll get just as good. Or you'll basically, it's basically like almost like trying to find a lazy way to do it. Like, I'm going to work 20% of the time and I'm just going to maximize on those core things, and that's going to give me the result. So I wouldn't use the Pareto distribution that way. I think if you use it that way, you're still going to be unhappy with your outcome from your training, because other people are going to find the techniques that are in the Pareto distribution. They're going to be working on them as well, but and then they're going to be working on things that are outside of the high percentage realm, the 20%, outside of that 20% realm. And those moves still work. They just work in very specific scenarios and they're lower percentage. And you still want to use them. You just want it to be a smaller percentage of your overall game plan or your playbook. Like, if you had a list of the moves that you like to do in a fight, that's what we're getting to with this. So if you train less, you still can't be lazy on this. Like, you can't, it's not gonna, the Pareto distribution isn't gonna be a cheat code. Somebody who's not using the Pareto distribution but training all the time is still gonna be able to beat you in a competition, even if they're wasting some time, just because they're putting more effort in. And it's a physical sport. So conditioning, flexibility, strength, like the physical aspects are an important component of all combat sports, and you can't neglect those. What you want to do is, if you're a competitor and you want to get good, you want to understand the 80-20 or Pareto distribution or Pareto principle, and then you want to use that effort that you're putting in to get really, really good, and you just want to hone it. You just want to narrow your scope on those really, really high percentage, the techniques that are used all the time. So if you think about any combat sport that you're doing, doesn't matter what it is, it's just for simplicity, we're going to say each one, just imagine whatever thing you practice at the gym, there are 100 different moves in that combat sport. Out of the 100, 25 are the ones that are worked or that are used all the time. So what you want to do is you want to start studying tape, and you want to, this is going on to the action item. We got to get still definition principle. But what you want to do is identify, and you want to work and practice those 25 out of the 100. And that's going to get you to get good very fast. So let's keep going on the Pareto principle, because I was going on action instead of getting the full definition. Let's see. So management consultant Joseph M. Giron developed the concept in the context of quality control and improvement, naming it after an Italian economist, Wilfredo Pareto, who noted the 80-20 connection while at the University of, I don't want to mess it up, like Lausanne, in 1896. His first work, French word, I don't want to mess it up, Pareto showed that approximately 80% of the land in Italy was owned by 20% of the population. The Pareto principle is only tangentially related to the Pareto efficiency. Mathematically, the 80-20 rule is roughly described as power law distribution, also known as a Pareto distribution, for a particular set of parameters, and many natural phenomena have been shown to exhibit such a distribution. It is an adage of business management that 80% of sales come from 20% of clients. Okay, so this is so more in the Pareto distribution, and then a couple different areas where it pops up where you see it. So in economics, Pareto's observation was in connection with population wealth. Pareto noticed that 80% of Italy's land was owned by 20% of the population. He then carried out surveys on a variety of other countries and found, to his surprise, that a similar distribution applied. A chart gave the effect of very visible and comprehensive form. The so-called champagne glass effect was connected to the 1992 United Nations Development Plan report, which shows the distribution of global income is very uneven, with the richest 20% of the world's population generating 82.7% of the world's income among nations. The Gini index shows that wealth distributions vary substantially around this norm. So with that, they found the 80-20 rule. 20% of the population generating 82.7% of the world's income. So if you live in the United States, you're in that top 20%. They're talking about on a global scale, when you got to think some people don't have clean water. Like they don't have clean water. They got to work really hard just to get clean water. So it's, there's, again, if you're not in the United States, you are born lucky. You're in the top 20%. Of the world's richest population, and you are you're part of the 82.7 of the portion of the world's income. So it's interesting, because like lots of times you might hear or think about money, but you would think something that applies to money wouldn't apply necessarily to other areas of life, or like sport, for instance. But that's where the Pareto principle is interesting. So you're right. So that's a little money, money side of Pareto distribution. Then we have next area is in computing. So in computer science, the Pareto principle can be applied to optimization efforts. For example, Microsoft noted that by fixing the top 20% of most reported bugs, 80% of the related errors and crashes in a given system would be eliminated. Lowell, Arthur expressed that, quote, 20% of the code has 80% of the errors. Find them, fix them, End quote. It was also discovered that in general, 80% of certain pieces of software can be written in 20% of the total allocated time. Conversely, the hardest 20% of the code takes 80% of the time. This factor is usually part of, it's all in caps, COCOMO, estimating for software coding. So I'm not in computing or coding, so I could have butchered the organization there. But it's just interesting, it's in computing too. That's part of the thing that's interesting is how it is in a lot of different areas. When you hear it in money, you're like, oh yeah, the 1% have all the money. Like it's like bam, you know. But then when you see the same thing occurring in different areas, it's like, oh, that's pretty interesting. Something that crosses goes across the board in sports. Okay. It has been argued that the Pareto principle applies to sport, where leading players often take the majority of the wins. For instance, in baseball, the Pareto principle is reflected in wins above replacement, an attempt to combine multiple statistics to determine a player's overall importance to a team. Quote, 15% of all the players last year produced 85% of all the total wins, with other 85% of winners creating 15% of the wins. The Pareto principle holds pretty soundly when it's applied to baseball. It has been suggested, but not tested, that the Pareto principle applies to training, with 20% of exercise and habits having 80% of the impact, suggesting trainees should reduce the variety of training exercises to focus on this effective set. So that's kind of what we're going to talk about, is exactly that for combat sports. That's what I've been talking about. So now we'll go... next one, occupational health and safety, where the Pareto principle says occupational health and safety professionals use the Pareto principle to underline the importance of hazard prioritization. Assuming 20% of hazards account for 80% of injuries, and by categorizing hazards, safety professionals can target those 20% of hazards that cause 80% of injuries or accidents. Alternatively, if hazards are addressed in random order, a safety professional is more likely to fix one of the 80% of hazards that account only for some fraction of the 20% of injuries. Aside from ensuring efficient accident prevention practices, the Pareto principle also ensures hazards are addressed in an economical order, because the technique ensures the utilized resources are best used to prevent the most accidents. So you can use the Pareto principle for efficiency. If you only have so much time to train, you prioritize and make your practice, as in the days that you train, as effective and as efficient as possible, so you can get the most out of them. Engineering and quality control. The Pareto principle has many applications in control. Where it was first created, its basis for the Pareto chart, one of the key tools. Sorry, I'm going to try to find a different thing. So this is engineering and quality control, health and social outcomes. Let's see, product lines. Many video rental shops reported in 1988 that 80% of revenue came from 20% of videotapes. A video chain executive discussed, quote, Gone with the Wind syndrome, end quote. However, in which every store had to offer classics like Gone with the Wind, Casablanca, or The African Queen to appear to have a large inventory, even if customers very rarely rented them. So, like, video rental things. It also, like, classical composers... the amount of songs classical composers, the amount of songs that they actually composed that are actually played, like, most frequently on streaming or radio or movies and things like that. Pareto principle also hits that one as well. So that's examples and definition of Pareto principle, and now we'll go into it a little bit more, and this go for combat sports. So this is also, the Pareto principle is related to Price's Law. So if you really want to nerd out and go further into this, you can check out Price's Law as well. It's an equation that has to do with outcomes like out, like say for corporations, like it's a mathematical equation, like the square root of a number with it can be applied for corporations with productive employees. So like say if you have a company of 10 people, what the Price's Law talks about or what it goes over is, say if you have 10 people that work for an organization or a company, three of those 10 people count for, they do 50% of the work. So anyway, if you've ever worked in a restaurant or something like that, you would notice that there's definitely a small number of people working in that restaurant that that do say 50% of the work, and there's a large number of people that constantly take cigarette breaks or bathroom breaks or you know whatever it is, but you know they're doing less work. So even you know working in restaurants, you can see that. But the Price's Law will do that. Price's Law will do that one on another day, or if you want to check that one out. When it comes to like the Pareto principle and Price's Law, something that's really important, like you could get pessimistic if you heard all those examples and you heard about Price's Law, you could get, pessimistic about it, and you could say, well, like, you know, it was going over that, you know, 20%, the majority of wealth or the majority of good athletes, we're going to talk about with techniques and stuff, but you could say, you know, the majority of musicians, it's the small 20% sell the majority of all the records, downloads, albums, stuff like that, you know, that is a thing. It has to do with compound interest. It has to do with, like, say gravity, the Pareto and Price's Law. They also affect planet sizes, cities. Like some in the United States, a small number of cities account for the majority of the population. Some cities, certain cities are have a small number of cities have the majority of all the populations that are in cities. It's just a thing that happens in nature. Things clump together. So in space, like if you think about asteroids or planets, the larger they get, the larger their gravitational pull. So they keep on pulling stuff. So with the Pareto principle and Price's Law, what happens, you know, it's compound interest, like the gravity when it comes to like asteroids, the gravitational pull, the more mass they have. But one of the things that's at play with it is that a lot of people think that growth or improvement in anything that you're doing is just linear, like you are, and it's just a gradual increase. Like that's the goal that you're looking for, is a gradual increase, 1% better each day, or 0.001% better each day, whatever you're looking for. You're looking for a gradual thing, but really it's not exact like this, not like a gradual straight line that's, you know, or gradual consistent line. You're going to have a bunch of ups and downs. You're going to have sharp downs and then you're going to have sharp ups. But as you get more mass, like as you start winning more fights or matches, you're going to win more. You're going to start getting better. You get into, you get the compound interest effect, and things start syncing up. After you've trained for 5 or 10 years, a lot of moves that you tried the first 3 years of training and you couldn't land at all of a sudden year 8 and 9, boom, it just starts hitting. And you're like, oh, that's really cool. I was terrible at that. And then it finally clicks. So you're getting a compound interest. Growth or improvement is not always improvement, we'll say, like say for metal stand, it's not just like a linear. It's not always like, hey, you come in last place and then like 16th and 15th and 14th. You might come in 16th, 15th, like of the tournament. If you're in a tournament, you might come in 15th, 16th, you know, 20 tournaments in a row. Then all of a sudden, bam, you break into the top five. Then bam, break into the top three. Then all of a sudden you're winning the tournament, winning the tournament, winning the tournament, winning the tournament. So with this, it takes a long time to get to that point. But when it hits, it's not just gradual. You will have breakthroughs. You'll break plateaus. And the other thing with that is like, you might say that like right now, if you were to look at like MMA fighters, you could use the Pareto principle for the UFC, and you could say that 20% of the, you know, a small percentage of the roster wins the championship belts, which of course, because there's only so many belts. But the thing that's happening with all of these things with the Pareto distribution is that the top is constantly churning. It's not a stagnant position. It's not a fixed position, because it's very hard. If you know, say if you're doing a jiu-jitsu tournament and you keep losing, and you're trying to get on medal podium, there can only be three people in medal podium. It's really tough. First, second, third. Or if you're an MMA fighter, kickboxer, only one person can win. It's really tough. But that, you know, so a small amount of people, a large amount of people sign up for the tournament, small amount actually win or get a medal. But that top three isn't always the same. It churns, it changes. A great example I could give is somebody, Adolfo Vieira. I brought him up on a podcast, a couple podcasts ago. Adolfo Vieira and his prime for jiu-jitsu, for gi jiu-jitsu, he was just a terror, like, you know, like just crazy, just beating everybody all the time. And then he recently tried to come back. He's fighting the UFC, recently tried to come back, and he did not have a good outing. I thought that's how it was going to be. And the reason why I thought it, because I've seen it multiple times. Saw it, you know, with Royce Gracie trying to get back to competition jiu-jitsu, but it also could happen if, you know, a college wrestler or Olympic wrestler went into MMA and then tried to go back to college wrestling, or not college wrestling, but Olympic. So it changes. Don't be pessimistic. Don't let it get you down and say, hey, I'm not getting first, second, or third. That means I never can. The champions are constantly changing every year. Every year there's new people. It's very hard to stay on the top of the medal podium. So don't let this get you pessimistic, and don't let it get you frustrated. Let's use it as a tool to make ourselves better and make our combat sports strategy better. Okay. Yeah, that's my joke was when I said the Illuminati, stuff like that, or the elites and stuff like that. Everybody kind of imagines that they're like, you know, it's fun to people talk about them like being in robes, dark robes, and candles and ceremonies and stuff like that. And there is actually some weird things that have happened, like some conspiracy theory things with some like weird little ceremonies with like elite people with crazy amounts of money. And there's definitely some weird stuff going on for sure. I just not experienced with that. It's not my profession, so I'm not sure about it. But one thing I will say with like you could say the Illuminati elites, like, or let's say hidden knowledge, the Pareto principle would be one of those things, like hidden knowledge. It's not super fancy or anything. But if you've ever heard the term generational curses, like our family's curse, like the family I grew up in, we had definite like generational curses, just really taught poorly about things like money, like just not saving money. Weren't taught about, like my family was not taught about, I'm talking about all my cousins, great-grandparents, stuff like that. They were not taught. It was not a conversation. Like delayed gratification was not a conversation. Or like a tip, you know. And there was a whole lot of people saying, like, you know, must be nice, you know, whatever it was. Somebody successful at something, they win the Super Bowl. It's like, oh, must be nice. That was a common term for my family. So there's definitely generational curses that you can pass down. So want to try to do as little of those bad little thought processes and pass them down to your children as possible. And maybe you were like me and you weren't, you know, you were not taught this. So maybe you're getting this early and this will help you out. Let's see. So predistribution applied to combat sports. Okay. And this is the big part for if you want to improve your skill and you want to win, you want to win the fight, win the tournament, you want to get good as soon as possible. And you could also break this down into different increments when it comes to your game. So if you're a kickboxer, you could focus on the rear kick, and you could Pareto distribution on the rear kick. If you're doing jiu-jitsu, you could Pareto distribution on no-gi, and then you could Pareto distribution for or principle for gi. Wrestling, you could Pareto principle for wrestling, and then you could do it for folk style, freestyle, Greco, and it's gonna. It's like a magnifying glass. It's just going to uncover something for you, like, you know, the little set of things. A great example of this is if you watch the UFC, Israel Adesanya and Błachowicz, watch that fight. That that's a good example of, so Israel Adesanya is one of the best kickboxers to come into the UFC ever, and even from losing that fight, it shows he's a very good fighter. He does a lot of really cool, fancy things, but in that fight, he lost the fight, and he lost not with anything like fancy. It was it's a good fight to watch because it was a good sound strategy on how to beat Israel Adesanya. Definitely a good one to study. It's like casual normal fans might not enjoy it because there's not a finish and there's not a bunch of drama, like, you know, someone gets knocked out in round one and then, you know, recovers and another person gets knocked out in round two. But it is going to let you know at the highest level things that are going to work. Like, you could just go watch that fight and you could take out a pen and paper and you could write down all the techniques that you see them do, all the different types of punches, all the types of footwork, all the kicks they're doing, the head movement they're doing, their defenses, and also the takedowns that were applied too. So you could write those down. That is a good example of a fight that would help you out. And so if you were thinking about an MMA strategy, that's one you could study right away. Trying to get that list again. Think there's 100 techniques, and 25 of them are work most of the time, or used most of the time, at the highest percentage. So that's quick example. And then now let's go into like what they are. Or real quick, the question is going to be, what about for my specific thing, boxing, Muay Thai, kickboxing, whatever it is. What are the specific lists for my thing? To get that, I can give you that answer, and we do give that answer, but you're going to have to come take a class at Phoenix MMA. That is how we create our lesson plan. That is what we're teaching you, is the highest percentage techniques. That's what we're teaching. And we also sprinkle some like some fun, fancy stuff as a smaller percentage. But that is the strategy for making the lesson plan. But, you know, also the Pareto principle for the majority lesson plan, so that you're learning high percentage techniques and strategies, and then sprinkle in some fun stuff as well. That's how we teach. That's how we make the curriculum. Let's see. Yeah, so just a breakdown on this. Like, when you're going, these are more tips, okay? You want best practices to fill you the majority of your game, and you want high percentage techniques. Sprinkle in the flashy moves, okay? Let's see. I give a percentage, just another. Sorry, I'm reading over my notes. So if you do that, if you use like the best practices, Pareto distribution, things that are the highest percentage, and that's the majority of your game, and you sprinkle in flashy moves, what it's going to give you is you'll have a high percentage game with the ability to do flashy dynamic techniques when necessary to overcome stalemate positions that require an outside-the-box approach. So I'm not saying to not do anything fancy. I'm just saying it shouldn't be the majority of your game. Okay, if you have nothing abstract, nothing fancy, have no wrinkle or nothing unique to your game, it's going to be really easy to study you, and it's going to be really easy to figure out exactly what you're going to do. And you're also going to get stalemated in certain positions where it's going to require a thinking outside the box approach. So I still want you to work on some fancy stuff. Just sprinkle it on, or that would be my suggestion for you to get like the max return on your training. If you're trying to kickbox, you're trying to win a fight, you're going to want to work on your fundamental punches, your fundamental kicks. You want to get them as fast as possible, as sharp as possible, with as little holes as possible. Then you want to work on the most common counters to all those techniques. You want to get those fast as possible. You want to work on all the defenses, those not just counters, but from your perspective, the counters to the counters, and you want to work on those as much as possible. And then you want to also add something flashy for fun. That's gonna maybe you're only gonna run into that scenario a small amount of times, but it's something that you can do on occasion, like the Anthony Pettis like Showtime kick, where he ran and jumped off the cage and did that round kick. It just needs to be a small percentage of your game. You don't want the majority of your game, your strategy, to be flashy stuff. If you do that, you're going to build a game that won't have the foundation that you need. And if you don't have the foundation that you need when it comes to competition, you are going to lose to people who do have a great foundation, and have all, they are good at all those techniques. The 20% of moves that win 80% of the time, they're good at all those, and you're not good at all those. You've been spreading your time out, and you've been putting more time into flashy stuff. Just by the numbers, by probability, if you just do the math, you're going to lose more often than they are, with that strategy. And that's going to frustrate you and maybe get you to quit or, you know, feel like you're burned out. But also, we're talking about combat sports here, and your health is on the line when you compete. Like, you could get hurt if you're fighting, if you're an MMA fighter or a kickboxer. You can get hurt. Like, you're getting punched, you're getting kicked, you're getting slammed. You know, people are trying to armbar you, they're trying to choke you. So I'm not trying to scare you with the getting hurt or anything, but it's not like playing soccer or basketball. Somebody beat you, you lose a kickboxing bout and you get kicked in the head, or you get kicked right in the knee and it pops your knee. It's different. So there's higher stakes. There's more. I think there's more on the line. If you're going to compete in combat sports, there's more. Just your physical safety as well, or your physical health. Is a reason why you want to narrow your scope. You want to work on the tried, true techniques. All these slogans that you know, like when you hear like rule of thumb or like don't reinvent the wheel. It's all these good old, these like old things that you hear. But just breaking down on how you can find it for your combat sport, whatever you're doing. Also, just real quick, there is value in exploring the other things, all the fancy stuff or the things that are lower percentage. There's a lot of value in it. One, it's really fun to do. Two, you're going to find little secret gems in there that will help you. There's some cool secret gems that you'll find when you go down like deep rabbit holes. Three, you're going to learn the pitfalls of that strategy. You might spend a whole year on something or 6 months on something, and then maybe in competition somebody's uses that obscure thing against you, and because you encountered it and you worked on it, you know exactly what makes it work, and you know how you can break down the technique, because you're like, hey, that technique's easy to counter as long as you know what to do. So, you know, exploring, there's benefits in the, let's see, it also, if you want to be a teacher, like an instructor, if you have any interest in doing that, you definitely want to explore rabbit holes, because you want to be able to teach everything. You know, you're going to run a class as efficient and give the best lesson possible to make your students as good as possible, as fast as possible. But they're going to be exploring, they're going to be studying stuff themselves, and they might ask a tip on something. So you want to know as much as possible. It's impossible to know everything, but if you're a teacher, exploring also helps you out. And, for the other reasons too. So action plans. Yeah, I already went over the any combat sport. Just imagine there's 100 moves, and 25 of them work all the time. So how you're going to find this, the tool for doing it is whatever combat sport you're doing, watch high level competition and mine for techniques, those 25 techniques. I just said 25. It could be 20. It could be more. Like, say if, you know, said given martial art has 1,000 techniques, then there's, you know, 200, 250 that are the main ones. So you want to watch high level competition, and you can just pull out a pen and paper, and every time somebody does something successful, offensive or defensively, like write it down, like freeze it, rewatch it for like 5 seconds, and then write that down and say, oh, okay. They keep on hitting a guillotine when your opponent shoots a high crotch, or like a, or they keep taking the back off my opponent. When someone shoots a fireman's carry, there's a back take from there. Oh, okay. There's a whole lot of high crotches that land. There's a whole lot of rear naked chokes that land. There's a whole lot of inside heel hooks that land that are successful. There's not a ton of wrist locks that land. Huh, that's interesting. Okay, there's not a ton of Americanas that land either. Oh, that's interesting. So like that's things you're going to notice as you're watching the matches, and the more you study, or the more that you train and take class. So study high level competition. That'll help you with those 25 techniques, or the top 20% of techniques. Also come to class, and that's what we're going to be working on, is fundamental. Lots of times you'll hear people say, stick to the basics, stick to the fundamentals. They're saying use the Pareto principle. And that's really what they're saying. Stick to the fundamentals, stick to the basics. They're the things that work the most. They're the high percentage things that work under the most stress. And they're the most tried and true techniques. Then build your playbook to the techniques out of that list that you find. I would say when you're building your game plan, like you're building your game, whatever your strategy is, I'd program about 10-20% of your game plan for flashy techniques. Because if you're too stagnant and you don't update any system or fighting style, if you don't update it, it will stagnate. So you need to have both. You need to have the high percentage things, but then you also need to be integrating new things, because there's always adaptations that are happening, just like technology. There's always adaptations that are happening, so you don't want to ignore those adaptations. And I'm not telling you to not constantly evolve your game and not to have any flashy stuff. Just program about 10-20% flashy stuff in, you know, whether that's a spinning hook kick or a go-go plotter or something like that. It's just not 70-80-90%. Think of it like dessert. You're not going to eat 70-80-90% of your calories from dessert. But if you have like 10% calories from dessert, if you're not trying to get super crazy low body fat, cutting a whole bunch of weight, you're generally pretty good. So if you do this, you're going to get good really fast. That's one thing, like, I can guarantee. If you do it and you stick to it for 6 months, 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, a year, you're going to improve. You'll notice it. But you have to stick on it. If you go straight from drilling high crotches to jumping leg scissor takedown or spinning 360 spin, Barambolo low ankle pick or something like that, when you're talking about takedowns, then you got to stay consistent on it. But you will improve very quickly if you apply this. If you got a short amount of time, you'll also maximize your training time. You'll maximize your training time with your busy schedule, and you can apply it to the rest of your life. So if you want to learn, like I said, how to cook really fast, you can do the Pareto principle with cooking. You could do it with instrument. You could do it with a new job. Whatever it is, if you have to change careers, something like that. So you don't have to stress out if you got to change careers or there's change and stuff like that. It's not too late to learn new skills. And you can speed it up too, if you use this. So that's Pareto principle. There's way more things that you can go to with it, but, hope that helped. Hope that's interesting. Maybe it wasn't interesting, but maybe it was. So this week's lesson plan too, just a little bit, touched on something about when I was saying build your playbook or build your game plan. This is like a teaser, what we're going to work on this week. I'm competing at the Orlando Open, the IBJJF tournament, the International Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu Federation tournament in Orlando. And something I was thinking about was I wasn't doing as much gi training as I was no gi. And so I got back into doing more gi training. And right when I got back into gi training, I started mentally going over my playbook in my head. So these are like the moves that, because I hadn't been doing gi as much, I had been doing more kind of what would come to me. I was kind of more exploring the sparring. But when it comes to competition, it's good to have a plan that you're going to work on. And then, of course, if you need to deviate from the plan or adjust, it's not a problem. But you do need a plan, so that way you don't hesitate. So that's going to be the lesson plan this week. I'm just going to go over, I'm going to show everybody what my plan is for the Orlando Open tournament this weekend, what my strategy is, and we're going to do it from bottom perspective, just because we only have enough time in 1 week for that. But I'm going to show the techniques I'm going to do left side and techniques I'm going to do right side. If my opponent's trying on the left side of my body, what guards am I going to use? What attacks am I going to use? If my opponent's on my right side, what guards am I going to use? What attacks am I going to use? What I'm going to do if they switch from right side to left side? What am I going to do if they pressure or back away? What am I going to do if the lower body is open or the upper body? So that's what I'm going to do this week to kind of show how I build a game plan, playbook. And you don't have to follow mine. Actually, part of why I'm going to show it this week as well is if I teach everybody, then you can work on countering the stuff, and that's going to force me to come up with new counters to the counter. But also, I'm hoping that this week will teach everybody how to put together a strategy. So it'll be an interactive class where you're going to not just get shown techniques, you're going to get taught moves this week, but also how to systemize them, how to put them, systematize them, put them, organize them together so that you could have a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu strategy. And you could take the same template and you just plug in different techniques, the ones that you like. Yeah, last, again, we got a bunch of competitions coming up, fights, MMA, kickboxing, and Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu tournaments. If you're part of the Phoenix Competition Team Facebook group, go check that out. Heather posted a ton of tournaments. She is awesome. Thank you to Heather for doing that. Posted a lot of information for tournaments, so check that out. It's a long list, plenty of opportunities. We have several MMA and kickboxing bouts. If you're one of our MMA fighters, kickboxing fighters, just talk to me, and if you're interested in competing, I have two separate matchmakers right now that are texting me consistently about different, trying to get people to fill their cards. So if you want to compete and you want to fight, we got that opportunity. If you want to compete in jiu-jitsu, got that opportunity. And if you just want to train, just have fun, like, feel free. You know, you just want to kickbox for fun, or box for fun, or do jiu-jitsu for fun, not a problem. Keep on training. We that's the cool thing, is not everybody has to compete. And we actually need people in the gym that are exploring, doing really creative, thinking outside the box, doing stuff, adventuring, because you need all different looks. And if everybody's exploring, trying to figure out different techniques that work, then you can add it to the group, and you can give good suggestions and say, hey, I've noticed, you know, this. It's a big project everybody in the gym is working on together. So anyway, hopefully you enjoyed this episode. Hope you liked it. Hope it was interesting for you, and see everybody tomorrow. See you.